Welcome to another episode of the RAG podcast. And for those of you who don't know, the RAG stands for Recruitment Agency Growth. Since early 2019, I've been interviewing the most successful and innovative recruitment owners to learn how they rose to the top of their game. In season 7, I'm going to be having raw, authentic, and insightful conversations with agency owners, entrepreneurs, leaders, people across the industry. And I want to be learning about their ambitions, what's happening behind the scenes in their agencies today, and their plans to navigate difficult market conditions. I'll be bringing you the latest and greatest recruitment stories every single week on Wednesdays at noon across multiple platforms. Stay tuned. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the RAG podcast. On this week's show, I'm excited to be joined again by Leisha Holmes. Leisha is the founder of Key Recruitment, a specialist rec-to-rec based in Manchester. Someone I've worked with since the pandemic who's now built 100% inbound business, okay? She went from being an amazing recruiter with incredible integrity who would only represent the best recruiters in the Northwest to carrying on that, but building an online brand that is seen by thousands of people every single day and has driven a complete 100% online and offline inbound business, referrals and LinkedIn. She also does not use LinkedIn Recruiter. She doesn't send any emails, any outbound messages whatsoever. In this episode, we unpack how she's done it and we look at the reality of the rec-to-rec space right now. What is really going on for leadership roles in recruitment? Are people hiring? Are people moving? We talk about the lot. So take notes. You're going to love this. Without further ado, Leisha, welcome back for the second time to the RAG podcast.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me back on. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you so much, Sean.
It's all right. Another podcast host to a podcast host. You've become quite a high flyer since the last time I had you on.
Yeah, I was going to say, we first recorded back in the summer of 2020. I think we were just coming out of lockdown, lockdown one. Who knew what was ahead? And I think I just started the Recruiters Recruitment podcast by mistake around that time. I think you kind of possibly inspired me to do it, just to go and have conversations with people.
I hope so. I remember I'd come from that time where I'd just gone to Ibiza to get over the divorce, or it wasn't even divorce, but the breakup. And I think I put a post up about something, and then you messaged because I said, I want to do interviews. At the time, if I'm honest, I couldn't really focus on business. My life was so emotionally drained that talking to people about more of the personal stuff kind of kept me going. So you were like, look, I've got a fucking nuts story to tell.
I think I dropped you a voice note on LinkedIn. We were already connected and you'd shared about you weren't divorced yet. I think you were just in Ibiza or you were coming back to Manchester or something.
Yeah, I was just in Ibiza, yeah.
And I said, have I got a story to share with you? And you were just like, wow, let's get you on. I actually think that was really innovative, because now, of course, I know we're going to talk about this today, but you know, the personal stories that you were sharing on your pod at the time is, I think, what elevated the RAG podcast, because you were sharing people's vulnerabilities in real lives, you know, and leaders were saying how shit it was in 2020. It was really tough for people, and I don't think that's necessarily changed. I think what's changed is people's acceptance of it, and that we're making it safer for people to be able to, you know, go to their leaders and talk about stuff that's happening. So I applaud you for that, because you definitely set the tone.
Thank you. I try to. Not always successfully, but I try to.
We're just people, right? We all have lives, and that's what we're normalizing with the fact that people have lives and stuff going on.
Yeah, so back then, I'd say, let's just go back to the start of this. When we met, I think you were still a successful rec-to-rec. But you'd not really come online with it. I think you had you were pushing yourself out on LinkedIn without a strategy. But once we met on that Zoom and we did the podcast, I was like, Leisha, I'm launching this bootcamp. You've got to be in this. You were in one of the first 10 cohorts I ever ran, and probably one of the most outstanding cohorts in terms of the people that were in it. So let's go back to that period of time. What was going through your mind, and why did you want to? I guess, why did you want to change your business in light of this lockdown?
Because so it's good. I think it's
done pretty well.
Yeah, it's good to contextualize it. I mean, I've never professed to be the biggest, but I've always said I want to be seen as the best rec-to-rec. And I've always put my business through reputation. And, you know, my stats have always proven that my referrals and repeat business is what I think sets me apart in a really saturated market. And I think if I genuinely, it's really hard to put yourself back in the mindset of 2020, because I think the reality is we're all probably just panicking a little bit. But I think when you and I connected, it was, you know, we were sort of 3-4 months into it. I knew I needed to do something else. I knew I needed to, I was on LinkedIn, of course I was. I've been on LinkedIn since probably about 2009, but I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And I was, you know, even then I was bored of sharing jobs, and I was just fed up of, you know, seeing the same old shit. And I thought, I'm just a really open person, and anyone that knows me offline as well as online knows that I'm just a bit of an oversharer. I just don't believe in bullshitting people. You know, what you see is what you get. I'm a proper Northern girl. And I'd started doing it actually on Facebook first. I'd shared a couple of videos and then realized that even though I've got about 1,000 it's mainly recruitment friends on Facebook, I thought, is this the right platform to be doing this? Because I've got, like, still got my auntie and my, you know, my sister on there and my mum on there. I'm like, actually, is that who I'm trying to say this to? Because they don't really understand what it's like to run a recruitment business, all due respect. And that's when I think I knew that LinkedIn was going to be the savior, but I didn't know what I was doing. And actually, the facts are that had already launched, and Kerry Ann Hargreaves was one of your, I think she was your first cohort.
That was it.
And I rang her because, you know, I've known Kerry Ann for about 15 years. I trust her enormously. And I said, do I need to do this? And she said, you're probably doing about 50% of what you'll learn, because she'd already come through it.
Yeah.
And I said, that's not enough. I need to do 100%. And that's when I said, right, I'm in. And my cohort was amazing. It was just, you know, it was a real who's who of leaders. It was like we were truly global. I was a bit
Cal Winterbottom. Cal Winterbottom, was Chris Eldred, there was
Lindsay Harland.
Saw Lindsay last week at the expo.
I missed him.
He's doing well.
He's doing very well. I'm a board advisor for Recruitment Founders Club. So it was, when I look at the people, you know, I remember coming out the first session and messaging Shannon going, I'm such a charlatan. Like, I'm just little old me. But I think that's what was really special, that you had attracted people in leadership roles that knew they themselves needed to do something to elevate themselves on LinkedIn. So I think, I hope that's as a starting point, because I know we're going to talk about where we're at now 4 years later. So I knew I needed to do something different. I knew I had a good reputation within my circle, but my circle was what? I am parochial Northern girl. I don't really go out the Northwest, but how do I promote that externally on LinkedIn without sounding disingenuous? I want to attract my target audience, and then understanding that could be a good starting point. That's really why I did it. And I came out of that academy, well, I know I was one of the top performers. Me and Cal were always begging. But it was without a shadow of a doubt, and this is without sound, I'm not blowing smoke up your arse, Sean, it was without a shadow of a doubt the best decision I made that year. Best decision. Best investment. Really was.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear that. In terms of, so if I go back to that time, I think LinkedIn was, I've been saying it for three years at that point. I've been saying brand and personal brand, but it really clicked about 6 months early for me. I was sat there at the beginning of the pandemic thinking, everyone, not every company, everyone who wants a job out of this fucking disaster.
Yeah.
Needs to take immediate action. Yep. We can't meet each other. We can phone each other, but what's the fastest way we can get to more people and get more attention and maybe find those vacancies that are there? Because there's definitely some out there. And it was like, and at that point I was like, I remember thinking, I've been a teacher.
Yeah.
I've built a recruitment desk to the point where I was, you know, one of the top billers in the country. And I've now got 1 million views a month on LinkedIn. Like, I know what I'm doing. And so I built this MVP. It was literally this week. It was Easter weekend last year. So as we're recording this, it was Good Friday till Easter Monday. I spent the whole weekend in my room, boom, 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 boom. And then I sent Amma the first MVP on the Monday, and he was like, good work, mate. It was shit looking back, but it was better than nothing. And then I did a free webinar. I did one little session out of all of them for free. 800 signups I got in 2 days. And I was like, right, that's the litmus test. I was listening to a podcast last week with Daniel Priestley and Stephen Bartlett on the Diary of a CEO. Yeah. And he talks about that waiting list mindset where there's no point in putting loads of effort into fulfillment of any service if there's no demand.
Yeah.
So I kind of put up the free webinar, carried on building. And by the time Easter weekend had gone, I'm like, I've built this really basic version of a product and 800 people said they want to come to the free version. So I was like, right, that was enough. And then, and yeah, we got 165 recruitment owners into that 4 month period, which you were one of. Yeah. And that transformed not only my life, my business, you know, but the way I saw my business as well. Like, we made money, we enjoyed it. And then, I mean, I went full bore after that into this as a product, which has been incredible, right?
And you've changed thousands of recruiters' lives because of it.
I think so.
And LinkedIn, and how we see LinkedIn, that something is your initial value proposition, which was that our personal brand is our most valuable thing that we can be sharing to an audience of multiple people that you're never going to be able to ever do on the phone, ever.
It was
transformational. So yeah, no, it was. I'm so proud to have been part of that.
Because if we look at the past, what I loved about you, the way you explained your way of working back then was like, it was how I'd grown up. It was like, I do right by people. Mm. I do what I say I'm going to do.
Yeah.
I move fast. I think fast. Yeah. And I'm genuinely prepared to say no to people if I don't think they're right for something.
All those things.
And I think that's what I always find in the best people I network with, that there's like those common threads, right? Yeah. So then when you've already got that offline, how does that translate to increasing your performance when you take it online?
Right. Okay. That's what you've just described there, in terms of that's how I operate, those are the values I operate by, is how people will know through consistent messages over a period of time that you are doing the things that you say you're doing, and it's what sets you apart. Because the reality is that whatever you do in recruitment, whether you're recruiting actuaries, recruiters like me, you know, data analysts, it doesn't matter. We're all doing the same job. We are all doing the same job. It's how we do the job, and it's the why. And what you've just said there about, you know, that integrity and saying no to people, but doing the right thing every single time, even when you're not posting about it on LinkedIn. So I'm not talking about, you know, self-promotion and being, you know, using the word again, disingenuous, but it's that consistency in how you say it. And when I get so much feedback on my LinkedIn, even to this day, I've had somebody contact me on Friday, the most incredible recruiter who's been following me for a year. She's never messaged me for a year, but she has been consistent.
Not even liked your content.
She said, I feel like you stalk. She's gorgeous. She's such a gorgeous person. She rang me Friday night and she said, I've been following you for a year, but I wanted to build up my billings. Great. And she used those words. She went, you're so consistent in what you talk about. So she felt like she knew me. And then when we actually spoke in real life, she said, you're exactly how I knew you'd be. That's it. That's it. And when you go to something like the Recruitment Agency Expo, which we were both at last week in March in London, which was fantastic, and you're meeting people in real life and you start chatting to them and you spend half an hour chatting to people, they go, you are really like the persona on LinkedIn. I'm like, obviously. But that's it. That's the whole point, that when you are investing in your personal branding on LinkedIn, you have to genuinely be yourself and be consistent with it and share your own authentic ideas and not try and generate off what you've seen someone else do. And you and I probably have so many examples of people that have done it really badly, but it's about connecting to the right people who like that message and attracting the right people through your message.
One thing I would say is, I think me and you probably lean, and if we're going to be really honest, we lean into that open book character. Yeah. Like we're both that. We meet and we chat, and within seconds, it's deep and it's meaningful and it's open and it's fun. Some people aren't like that. No. In our recruit, I actually probably underestimated how many people in recruitment are more reserved and a bit more
guarded.
And again, I don't know how many of them end up at the top. Mm. There's probably a few, but I think if you looked at a line of introvert and extrovert in the industry, the top end of this of the industry would be leaning in the extrovert space, I think, just from my experience.
Yep.
But there are some people that are just incredibly diligent, incredibly good at the job, work fast, so organized, and they can be, you know, bill £1 million without having to do this kind of open book type scenario. But so if, you know, how, again, I know what I would say, but how would you advise someone who's maybe not as open as you? Like, what can they do to take themselves from maybe a 1 out of 10 or a 2 out of 10 to a 3 out of 10, rather than being a 7 or 8 like me and you, 2 out of 10? What is it about for them?
I mean, I've had this conversation actually on a number of occasions with people who feel really uncomfortable, maybe feel a bit guarded, have got some incredible personal stories that I think they could share that would really inspire people. But they, I don't think it, well, I think shame is a big word for people, but they just don't feel comfortable, and that's fine. And I often say you could use that experience and talk about it in a more generic way where it's not necessarily about you. And I encourage them to invite debate and discussion. I mean, you know, obviously Laura's become really prolific on LinkedIn. I know she did the Hoxo, I think, in 2022, a bit after me.
Yeah.
And she probably doesn't share personal stories, but she'll share things that have happened to her in her day job. She's really comfortable sharing that. So I think, and Shannon's the same, actually. Shannon's, you know, like everyone, we've all had stuff going on in our lives, but she feels more comfortable sharing scenarios that have happened on her desk than maybe, you know, I'll just be like, yeah, I've been married and divorced twice. Second guy came out as gay. You know, I'd just be like, I'll tell everything to everybody.
Yeah.
But I think you and I are not the norm. I think you and I are probably in that very small bracket.
I think we're right at the top end. Yeah. I think there's probably an 85% to 90% vacuum that we're not in. But then in the upper 10 or 20 percentile of the open book relationship, I think that's where a lot of your top performers. If I really look at all the people that I've worked with that are running great businesses that are great online, they usually let you know, they'll know all their clients' wives' names. Yeah. They'll know their football teams. Yeah. They'll spend as much time talking about non-work relationship as they do about work relationship.
And you'll just, because you'll know you'll have built that relationship and you'll have built that trust. And I think that's a word we've not said yet. And it sounds really cheesy saying trust, but I think when you're looking at someone's profile on LinkedIn over a period of time and you're choosing a recruitment partner or you're choosing to move jobs and go and look at a new employer, you're building up trust. And the only way that you can build online trust is through that consistency. And I don't think you necessarily need to share marriage failure or, you know, bereavement or, you know, I talk a lot around menopause and that sort. You don't have to share those things.
No, you don't.
But I think what you choose to share, if you're going to share on opinion or on an experience that's happened to you, be honest about it. And, you know, and don't be afraid to share your opinion on things and, you know, be divisive if you need to be, because I truly believe that you will then attract the right people, and it's about, you know, doing it with the right intentions. So I love content that is personal. I personally, that's using the word twice, but I'm such a magnet when someone shares something that's happened to them in their personal lives, more so than if they're sharing, you know, a team event or something like that. I'm like, yeah, whatever. But if they're sharing something really vulnerable, I'm like, oh my God, I really want to know about this. And I always drop a message. I always drop a message, especially if it's a leader, because I know they've put themselves out there. And I know that, you know, I know the bravery it takes. So I think if you're listening to this and you aren't somebody that likes to share the personal side of you, you can still share something that's personal to you that's happened in your day job that will just allow people to see the real you about how you think and how you...
Well, if you look at Kyle, who's one of the best I've ever worked with, he doesn't really do the personal
stuff.
His content don't really ever include the odd thing about his family, but 90% is about work and data, but he's incredible with it. And he's so consistent and he's detailed. But the bit that I love about Kyle's content, it never goes to a technical level. Like, he's not a technical guy. No. He never works in data. So he's very good at being able to go, this is the part I play.
Yep.
And he sticks to what he knows.
Yep.
He doesn't pretend he's a data analyst. Like, no. Some people are like, do I need to like give my clients advice about their industry? I'm like, well, they'll know more than you if they're any good.
Exactly.
You've got to consistently talk about the movement of people and what's changing with that. And it isn't just interview advice over and over again. I mean, that's brilliant. But it's what's actually happening in the market, what's changing when it comes to the recruitment life cycle. I mean, and I said this morning, I had a live cohort today at 6, I do 7 a.m. now, which I'm really early these days. I had about 30 people all over the world on it. And I said, if you're looking at candidates, is being in the right job, you know, one of the most important decisions you'll ever make? And everyone said yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, if you're a leader, is having the best team around you, again, one of the most important factors in your own career success?
Mm.
Everyone says it's probably the number one factor.
Yep.
So if you remember that as your like North Star, even when people aren't actively looking or hiring, they're always going to have they're always going to have an opinion on it, and they're always going to have one eye on it because it's so important.
Yep.
So I'm not hiring at Hoxo. I've got no interest right now.
No.
But I'm still thinking about the people in my team, and you know, if one of them left, there's a vacant. There's always something that means I'm always keeping an eye on that as part of my journey. Mm. So I hope I don't have to find another job. That is something I don't want to read about. I don't want to be a candidate.
I was unemployable 25 years ago. Never mind now. No, I agree with you. I think what you've said, if I'm listening to what you've just said there, it's about defining yourself as an expert in what you do. And
stick to what you do.
And, you know, I'm an expert in recruitment and I still don't know everything. I'm still learning. I'm not saying I'm the finished article.
Let's get some of that out of your head, right? Okay. So tell me what is going on right now. Like, so if I'm if I'm listening to this and I'm thinking I could start my own business or I could go and join a new business, like, what is the most common thing that when you're talking to senior people looking for new roles or thinking about starting an agency, what's the most common questions that you get asked?
Is it the right time to do it? Is it the right time to do it? We've just been through, I think, one of the most challenging periods since, forget COVID, because that was a fake sort of pause on recruitment, because then we had that unbelievable boom. For me, this has been the most challenging market since 2009. So to sort of give an evolution of my career, I started in 98. We had a recession in 2000, I think, in the automotive sector that I worked in. We obviously had then the millennium bug, which never really happened. And then things were fairly steady until 2008. Financial markets crashed. 2009 was horrific for anyone that's worked through it. And it really was horrific because nobody was prepared for it. And I think that the first quarter of it, so, you know, literally January to March, has possibly been the most challenging, certainly for perm recruiters that I've seen. There are certain pockets of industries that are having a more challenging time, particularly public sector, healthcare. You know, they can't wait for the general election in the UK because I think that will have a massive impact when Labour get in. And then you've obviously got the tech hangover from last year. You know, I've never witnessed that sort of industry decimation specifically in one sector. So last year for us, you know, we actually had a really great year as a RecTorec. I think we were quite unique in that, but a lot of what we would have done up until 2023 was probably about 50% tech. And last year, I think it was about 15% tech. That kind of gives you an idea because...
What have you happened then? Were people like, what were, I guess, rec businesses or tech rec businesses doing?
Well,
like,
so, what were they just... And I have to be generic because obviously I can't...
Yeah, we're not going to hone in on any individuals.
But this is a genuine overview of what happened. So obviously, tail end of 2022, America went into recession. We then followed suit, although it was actually not technically a recession, but it created a catastrophic cascade effect on internal hiring. So Meta, for example, they'd obviously hired in loads of internal TA people from recruitment agencies. Absolutely, you know, and enhanced salaries beyond any market recognition. So then these people are then being forced back onto the market. And what happened for most of 2023 in the tech space, from my perspective, was that the supply and demand model broke. You had so many. I mean, we just had, I call it a tsunami. It was horrific. You know, the amount of redundant internal tech-focused recruiters that came onto the market unintentionally.
Wanting to go back into recruitment.
Being made redundant, basically. It was really, really tragic. And, you know, then recruitment agency owners rightfully saying, well, hang on, are they coming back into agency because they have to, because they want to?
We used to have a policy at Venquist where if you leave the industry, you're not coming back. Right?
And I kind of, you know, you have to take each individual on its own merits and their own, you know, if somebody had just started in internal. So it was such a, for a lot of people, a really traumatic time, especially those that had taken really enhanced salaries from, you know, but large businesses like Meta, for example. But then what happened across other sectors was the ripple effect, because you had all these out-of-work tech recruiters who were fantastic at finding talent but maybe weren't very good at business development or hadn't ever had to do cold calling before, which I know you've talked a lot about on LinkedIn. So I think that for those listening now, genuinely, and this is where a good RecTorec does earn their reputation, why the hell are you moving jobs right now? Because actually the ship is steadying. So where we're at right now is that as we go into beyond April 2024, in fact, Neil Carberry presented it at the expo last week, that all the data is showing that we're through the worst of it now and that the focus on perm hiring has returned. So confidence is back in the market. I always think RecTorec is a good barometer. So we've had a really strong March and April looks really good. We've already hit our April target. So it's looking good going forward. But I think that for people, and I only place people into senior leadership roles generally, that's my bread and butter. I have to ask the question, you know, why would you leave a good job right now? But I think that leaders have had a very difficult challenge, because you've always got to consider, you know, we know we're going to come out of this. We need the best people. We need the best people who are prepared to do business development. And then we've got a deficit now of people that have been let go over the last 18 months who were the talent seekers. You know, we should never have got rid of the talent seekers, because now we're back into a talent short market. So I think it needed to settle down. I think it's been a very erratic market.
Like you say, and you say erratic, I think what you're referring to is some clients have just cut yeah. aggressively, right? What are those people that you've, let's say you've recruited for them, they've then cut, because I know, you know, from other contacts that the amount of 100-seat firms that are sat with like single-digit or early double-digit headcount is nuts, right? Yeah. So they've gone 70-80% of the headcount gone.
Yeah.
Are they then coming back to you going, right, Leisha, we need to go again now? Like, is it literally like a trap they turn on, or are they having more
more discerning, more nervous, will only go to market, will only hire somebody if they are proven, which I think should always, for me, where I sit in the rec-to-rec market, it should only ever be that. And I'm not being unkind, but I think in what I saw at the start of 2022, if I turn the clock back literally 2 years ago, was this panic buy that anyone that had a pulse basically was getting a job in recruitment and never had to have any experience, never really got qualified. You know, interview processes were just, I saw people getting offered the most insane salaries that had literally no experience. And so it was basically a catastrophe of errors, I think, that it was bound to happen to a lot of companies. And I understand that people, you know, were on that crest of a wave. But I think now if companies are listening and they've had to lean up, and I think any company that's gone through a lean process to ensure that they've got the right people in place now, of course you're only going to hire in the right people, but that's what you should have always done. So that's, I think you learn from that. I saw a lot of startups go through that cycle of, you know, extreme growth, you know, percentage year on year, and then boom in 2022, had to cut back anyone that didn't have an ROI or maybe didn't have the right BD skills. And I would just, you know, throw it out there that I think where we're at now in terms of, you know, the market is at a really exciting point, especially with AI and especially with, you know, I think the opportunity across so many different spheres. Just think about your model. Think about getting people into their natural flow. Don't just discredit somebody because they're coming onto the market because they only do 180. Actually, is that somebody that you could plug into a really good business developer, for example? So,
yeah. A message from our sponsor, Vincere. Another of their products is known as Time Temp. This is your complete integrated timesheet workforce management solution. It's pre-built, it's pre-integrated, and it's designed so no matter how much your business grows, you'll be able to keep track of every single worker in one place in your CRM. All the changes inside Vincere will sync with Time Temp and will be fed back into your account, automating the entire process with two-way sync from your front to back office. Vincere's Time Temp enables you to create shift schedules, search available workers, shortlist and book assignments in seconds. They'll also allow you to track time, track leave, track expenses within their built-in payroll engine. It's called DoorClock. And then they've also got a mobile app for the on-the-go worker. If, again, you're looking to get more from your CRM, Vincere's Time Temp solution is another tool that enables you to perform more of your business-critical processes in your CRM. Find out if you could use Time Temp via the link in the show notes. Right, let's get back to it. All right, so there's different ways people can run the business. There's different models. And right now it's about, like you say, not discrediting people. But I think the challenge that I've seen is people got really comfortable in that amazing market and then shit the pants in reality.
Yeah.
Thought about cost control, which is fine. But they've still not, post-COVID, I don't think people are totally comfortable in the skin that they've got. And what I mean by that is their model. Like before COVID, it was everyone's in the office and that's how we work. Yeah. Boom. Mm-hmm. Since COVID, like I went completely remote and I felt liberated and I've never had to think about it. Whereas 90% of people I know, like we do 2 and 3, we do 4 and 1. It's a bit of a mind fuck, really. But I don't know the answer, because I know when you've got a 35-year-old recruiter who's got two daughters at home and he's like, I'm not coming in 5 days a week and he's great.
Yeah.
You're not going to lose that person. But equally, you've got someone who's 25 who's coming into the business and you're like, they need to be in.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, what have you seen anyone get that right?
Yeah.
in that
very few, but yes, I have. And I think that you're right. I think it's a mind fuck. And I think, I mean, I listen to, I know you devour podcasts as well, and I do. And I listen to a lot around workplace culture, like Bruce Daisley's, and he has on, you know, people from Slack and Google and stuff, and they use all the data. So it's not just Leisha Holmes going, oh, by the way. And based on data, you know, the reverse of people mandating back in the office is actually because of commercial property prices. It's actually got nothing to do with productivity. It's actually a fallacy, because if you think about the cost per desk, you have to make sure that there's an ROI on that. So you don't want everyone sat there in an office 3 days a week, and then what are you doing 2 days a week? So I you know, once I remember listening to that about 18 months ago, going, ah, that's what it's about. Makes sense. So I think the ones that I see that do it really well, and it comes back to that word trust, Sean, are the ones that have anchor days. So they will have, you know, let's say we're going to all be in on a Tuesday and a Wednesday, but we can do it around, you know, they're taking into account people who've got caregiving duties, whether it's kids or dogs. So they'll say the core hours are 9:30 till 4:30, you contracted 8 till 6 or whatever, but we need you in those hours Tuesday, Wednesday. And then if you want to do any of the day, that's up to you. And if you don't want to and you want to work from home, that's fine. We're giving you that trust. And you know, the irony is that people come in probably 4 days out of the five, they choose to come in because they're being treated like adults. But I do think what your example is the perfect dilemma scenario of what the fuck do you do? Because if you've got, you're bringing in graduates, you're bringing in trainees, they need the osmosis effect of learning from the 35 and nearly 50 year olds who don't want to be there 5 days a week. So that's why the anchor days do work. And I think it, I think it's a really challenging one, but I think that it's the same as asking what's the best commission structure. I don't think there's one size that fits all. I think you have to stick true to your values as a business. And I think you need to get feedback. Don't be dictatorial about it. And treat people like adults, because it's counterintuitive not to. So that's just the best advice. And I know that there are idiots out there. There are always going to be people that take the piss. Well, then get rid of them anyway. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not saying sack them, but if people, if you don't trust somebody that works for you enough to actually do the job when they're at home, then either you're not providing the right support or they're not the right person for your business. That's my view on it.
Real problem. Real problem. Mm. If we go back to you then, since we've last, since we did start working together, and I've obviously seen what you've been doing online, but I've not seen the detail behind the result. Because a lot of, I had a, someone actually called me out. I know it was me. He didn't name me. A guy called David Wolstenholme in Australia who does a similar product to me.
Right.
He wrote about, like, be wary of people's personal brand analytics because, you know, they might not be making any money in the background. And he's claimed that one of my clients didn't do very well and blah, 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 blah. I don't know the detail behind it. But my argument is, you know, personal branding doesn't make you the money. Like, you've still got to be good at recruitment and sales. Like, you have to be good at, that's the bit I'm almost like counting on the clients to be able to do. Like, I'm not getting, I don't want to get involved in that bit. I'm not interested. There's enough trainers in who do sales and recruitment training.
Yeah.
I'm adding that layer on top. So, you know, if people are telling me they're billing 200K and then they do this on top and they keep doing what they're already doing, like, they're going to make more money. It's a no brainer. So when it comes to you statistically and how genuinely, what has the impact been from the 2020, 22, 23, like, of doing this as well? Because you were already successful. You didn't come in going, I'm struggling, I can't make money. Like, you were good. So what's it done for you?
Yeah, I think that's really funny, by the way. And I think that that's true. I think that anyone that thinks this is going to be a quick fix is probably the person that sat there sending out spam emails, but that's just my view on it. So I've always measured, since day dot, I've always measured where I get my candidates from and where I get my clients from. The source, always have done, for me, because we have a referral scheme, so it's factual. And actually, when I was preparing for this and I sat down and wrote down on where the sort of flow has been, I've actually done 2019 onwards because I thought it'd be interesting to see pre-Hoxo and pre me really focusing on my LinkedIn. And if we take, you know, and I'm doing it as me and Shannon, by the way, because Key Recruitment London Limited, which is Laura, is a separate business. So I'm just going to focus on Key Recruitment Limited. If we say we average about 45 grand a month, so then it will give you the actual revenue figure. 2019, about 20% of our placements came from directly from LinkedIn. People, because, and I just want to say as well, we don't really use TikTok, and I know we should be, but there's no way that people are going on TikTok and then on LinkedIn. This is genuinely LinkedIn. No. Same with Instagram. I don't know why I'm on there. I just like food recipes and gym. 2020, it because I went on Hoxha, bearing in mind it was latterly in the latter part of the year, and obviously 2020 was not a great financial year. I actually just, as a personal achievement, there was only 1 month in 2020 I didn't bill. I'm still so proud of that, which was May. I still had a starter in every month of 2020. 40% of our revenue came from LinkedIn that year. 2021, it was half of our revenue. 50% of our revenue came from, and that, so that was directly correlated to Hoxha. 2022, it was 40%, which is still a significant amount of money. Last year it was actually only 20%, and I'm really interested in that, because that's obviously now 80% of our business is coming. It's interesting for me to say this, that the 80% was all through referrals. And I think because last year was such a challenging market, we had a lot of people that have known us for years. They probably have seen us on LinkedIn, but have come back to us because they've used us before.
Yeah, and it's how they come back in that moment, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And then this year so far, it's been about 10%. It's actually all mainly referrals so far this year. And I wonder, and I was chatting to Shannon about it off camera before we recorded today, and I was like, what do you think the reason for that is? And we wonder if it's because it has been a more nervous market in the last 12 months, that people are choosing to go through referrals as opposed to, you know, are there loads of people doing the in-mails? I mean, we've not even talked about that, Sean. I am the only rec to rec that does not do outreach. I'm 100% inbound from LinkedIn. 100%. I don't do in-mails. I don't send e-shots. I don't send mail shots. Everybody that comes to us from LinkedIn has approached us. We've not approached them.
Yeah, or via referral, right?
All via referral.
It's the same way. Mm. I think offline referrals and LinkedIn are almost like the same thing, just in different. Because the amount of people I've just had a connection on an email by a client who goes, Sean, you need to speak to this company, right? Mm-hmm. Spoke to them today and they're like, oh yeah, we've been watching you for ages.
There you go.
So they've not technically come via LinkedIn. They knew us and they asked a question about us to someone they knew and they're like, oh yeah, I'm using Sean. And he's like, oh, what's he really like? And then he's like, oh, he's really good. So then he's like, right, cool. So I think there's tangible data and there's intangible data.
I agree.
But what I would like to ask you is, how much better is your job when it's 100% inbound? Because that's the bit. People don't believe it. Like, we've recently brought in someone into our business who was one of my clients. He's now working as a consulting sales director. And he's like, I didn't really believe you were inbound. I thought it was like a bit of a buzzword. But now he's like, I can't fucking believe how much we get. Like, we get 1,000 leads a month, tracked every month.
That's amazing.
Yeah, like I'm looking at the data now as we sit here on the 25th of March. We're actually on 772, so we're a little bit lower. But we've switched our ads off. So we spend like $8,000 to $10,000 a month on Instagram and Facebook advertising, which you probably start seeing on your...
I do.
So I've had to turn it off. I've had to turn it off because we're getting too much and the expo fucking flooded.
Amazing.
Up. So yeah, so in one day last week, I got 88 leads in a day, which was a pretty cool day. And then, in January, I got 1,169 leads. Last month, I got 962 leads. So it averaged out for the last 14 months straight of 1,000 leads a month, right? And I would say what it's done for me is it means I wake up every morning and I know me and my team speak to people who want to talk to us. And that is fundamentally a better job.
Right.
Fundamentally. Like, I don't give a fuck what you say.
I know,
for me personally. Better job.
You asked me a question. How does it feel? I know that the people I'm going to speak to, we're probably going to like each other. Yeah. Is that okay to say that likability is really important in business? And if people are coming to me, it's because I've either done a good job for someone else, so they know that they're in safe hands, or they've been following me, which is probably both. And I agree with you on ROI. I think it's all, the data is all great. That analytics I've just given you is great, but it's all bollocks. At the end of the day, you know, We all know that advertising is subliminal. That's the reality. And if you're not doing it, and if you're not putting your brand out there on LinkedIn, you are going to miss out. I think that income that I've described to you, the 20, 40, 50, 40, 20%, 10%, that's additional revenue, in my opinion, that I wouldn't have had. That's how I see it. I don't think it replaces. And I think that's a really important point to make. Having an inbound business, well, I just want to say I'm never complacent. You know, that's the reality. And that's what this, maybe I needed that, this Q1 to make me stop being a bit complacent, possibly. I'm never complacent about it. I appreciate it. But it means that I know I'm going to be having conversations with someone that values me and respects me. And I'm not arrogant saying that at all. But I think it's a very mutually enjoyable process, even if it doesn't result in actual revenue.
And that's the bit that I wanted to just make sure you said there. Like, that doesn't mean every client, 1,000 leads. I don't get 1,000 clients a month. I wish I did.
No.
And sometimes there is crap in there and what have you. But when you connect to the right people, you speak about what matters to them, relating back to your service. It does start to even out. Like, you're always having a good quality conversation with good quality people. Mm. Or could you spend 2 days selecting people you want to talk to and headhunting and cold calling and all these things? Of course you could.
Yeah.
But if you're making the money you want to make and you're doing it without having to do any of that,
Yeah. Brilliant.
Like, what we're thinking about Hoxo is outsourcing cold calling in the future. Like, I actually think cold calling, I don't believe it doesn't work. I believe it works. I get calls every day. I just think the worst use of my time ever would be to do it.
Yeah.
Like, I could not. Could you imagine ringing recruitment firms now going, hi, you're looking to hire?
But I still do. If I do a cold call, I will have probably found them on LinkedIn. That's the truth. And I have a reason for my call.
Yours is different. Yeah. You're calling with it. You know the company. You know what they do.
Exactly.
A candidate. Like, it's a revenue generating candidate that the most people are going to buy. Yeah, I'll have a look. But if you're
cold calling's dead. I don't think cold calling's dead. And I think it's really important for you. And, you know, those recruiters listening, of which I know there'll be plenty, because I know they listen to mine. They've got a voracious appetite to learn, that are in the first stages of their recruitment career. And when I say first stages, in your first 5 years, you absolutely have to be doing the work. You have to be doing the cold calling. And that includes candidates too. You have to be making the numbers. It is a numbers game in your early career. And I think that's always the danger of seeing the high performers, seeing the top billers, probably making 20 calls in a day and then billing, I don't know, 40, 50 grand a month. And you go in, well, hang on, why am I being targeted to do 40 calls in a day or whatever? Well, because they did that at the start of their career. It's how you... It's how you make your mistakes. It's how you do your fuck-ups. It's how you get the phone slammed down on you. It's how you understand how to overcome objections. It's the real life of a recruiter. And I think it's really important to combine the two. I do. I don't think there should be a one way of doing business in whatever your desk is. But I'm glad that I said that as well, because, you know, it's brilliant having an inbound model. It's brilliant having a business where, you know, I know that, you know, people that are going to come and talk to me want to talk to me, but I am the only person that makes my phone ring. That's the reality. And those are the people that I'm choosing to work with. And I never go into any process assuming or having any expectation on that person necessarily getting the job or wanting the job or them hiring my candidate. My only expectation that I ever have, which all comes back down to that one key word for me, which is trust, is that it's right. It has to be right. And I think that's where, you know, there's this golden thread all the way through of everything I do.
And I think what we can kind of agree on, and I think what we've concluded, is you've got to be good at your job first. Like, going straight to building a brand with no foundational skills behind it, that's where I'm not saying it's a problem. I think build your brand from day one if you can, but you have to be doing the other stuff. Mm. And, you know, I'm in a luxurious position where I spent 10 years, you know, in and around recruitment. Well, 15 years or so now, I've done all the sales roles you can think of. I've done the business the old way. Mm-hmm. I'm now in a position where I don't want to pick up the phone to people I don't know. I don't want to do it. And I don't think I'll ever have to. I'm that confident. I don't think I'll ever have to. I think I'll always be able to generate through my channels enough business in the way I want. And it's how I want to work. Like, I want to wake up in the morning and be excited about my day. If I'm going into an office going, fuck, I've got that list to ring and I'm dreading it, I'm like, I don't want to do that anymore. But you've got to get to a point in your career where you can get the luxury to make those decisions early on.
Definitely,
you've got to go and try it all. You've got to try it all. In terms of the future, then, so your business is profitable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got a small lean team. You're not looking to grow. What are you doing? Like, what is the point in what you? What's driving personally outside of work? Like, what are you trying to create?
Gosh, I mean, we're recording this as I'm turning 50 and in May.
You're not.
I am turning 50 in May. And, you know, it's it's such, and I was just like, because I'm not having a party or anything, I'm just doing lots of little things all year. But actually, it's actually a really, really big number. And it's knowing, like, I've gone into this year on, you're asking me about personal stuff here, that I have definitely had half my summers, unless I live to be over 100, which is statistically very unlikely. I know I've had half my summers now, I've had half my Christmases. And knowing that, is, I'm not saying that in a depressed way, I'm saying that in a literally can't be fucked with the people wasting my time. And so the my can't be asked meant like brain is so now alert that I can sniff it out a mile and I just don't waste my time on it. So I'm like a bit of a shark with it. No, that's the wrong word to use, but like I'm just sniffing out the opportunity and going, right, well, they're not on my values. So I'm not, I don't want to, you know, I'm not the right, I'll say I'm not the right person for you. In terms of the business, no, I'm not going to ever say never. In fact, Shannon and I have talked about bringing someone else on board, but they'd have to be the right person. They'd have to work the same way we do. And actually, the reality is the way we work is so unique in the RectorX space that they would have to be like, and then some. So I think that's something that we, you know, we've always got our eye on the market. It would probably be to do global RectorX. I just don't have any desire to do international hours. I'm far too old to be doing calls at 10 o'clock at night. And, you know, the reality is people probably think we're quite parochial, but there's so much business in the spaces that we operate within. Yeah. We know that if we get a good candidate, we can place them. So the podcast, we did our first live show in November and we've got our next one booked in June, which is already, we're so excited about that. And in fact, I can probably say now officially we're going to be going to Dubai in February to do one over there. So I'll probably be asking you for some potential guests if you know of anyone. So there's like that sort of thing where, so to answer the question, where I see me in my sort of the next 10 years, I guess, of my career is adding value. We talked off camera. I'm an executive coach. It's not something I've really promoted. So giving things back to people, it tends to be small business owners who, you know, have set up on their own. They don't really have anyone to, as a confidant or to give ideas. You know, I've been advising business leaders of recruitment for the last 20 odd years. And I genuinely have so much passion. If the blip I've just personally experienced is anything to go by, it's given me that love back of doing things properly, going back to the basics, being consistent and, you know, being the best advocate for our industry, which I am so proud to be part of, which, you know, we are. I always say, you know, what doctors do, what nurses do, you know, they are the lifesavers, you know, they are literally saving lives, whereas we're life changers. And I think that the more people like you and I can elevate the external perception of recruitment by doing the right thing every day, day in, day out, even if it means it doesn't end up in financial revenue at that time, is why I do what I do. And it's actually why I started my business nearly 20 years ago. So
have you got a plan? Have you got a plan for like what to do with the business to like invest into different channels, sell the business one day? Or have you thought about, I guess, what it's creating for you long term?
Long term, you know, obviously heading to pension age, Sean. Not quite. Still got quite a way to go.
Got a long time.
Possibly. It's something that I'm in discussions about at the moment, actually, with my financial advisors as to what my exit might look like. But to be honest with you, you know, I'm a very profitable business. You know, I've always been very lean anyway, but we got rid of our office in COVID. And we're probably never going to be anything other than a remote business now. So our profit margin is exceptional and long may that last. And I'm really proud of that. No, I love it. And the thing is, I absolutely fly the flag of having a lifestyle business. And I'm really proud of that lifestyle. I pick and choose who I do business with. I say no to more people than I say yes to. I am so proud of what I do. I have a great harmony in my life, you know, gym goer, you know, strength training, you know, getting out there on podcasts. You know, I'm doing quite a lot of keynote speaking as well now, as well as running my own pod and doing the coaching. So I think that that's keeping me busy for now. But yes, now that I'm going into my 50th decade, no, fifth decade, sixth decade, what is it? There you go. That's a middle-aged brain for you. I've got my eye on what the exit will look like. But to be honest with you, I think as long as I can maintain good health, genuinely, that is where I'm at right now. That's all that matters to me, just having good health. And that means mental and physical health.
And you enjoy your job anyway. It's not like you want to stop doing it.
I genuinely, I know this sounds mad. This is my 26th year in recruitment, which is mad. I still get really excited when somebody gets an offer that they really want. I genuinely can't contain my excitement. I'm never that cool. So what would you do? It's like, I already know what they're going to accept because I've already managed it to the end. I'm literally crying with glee for them. So I think when that goes, then it's time to hang up my hat and do something else. But, you know, in terms of succession plan, I mean, Shannon is just, you know, like everyone wants a Shannon. Everybody wants a Shannon.
I want a Shannon.
If I had a pound for every time a client said, can we just have a Shannon, please? You know, watch this space because my youngest interned for Shannon last year. She's planning to go and do some DJing when she finally turns 18. And I think she might come full circle and come back to recruitment. So that might be the future there. Key recruitment and daughter.
Yeah, why not? You know, one thing me and Amma are looking at the minute is like our long and short term strategy. So, like, I think one thing that businesses get so hung up on is one of the two. Yep. So you either, you're pure lifestyle, so you're earning good money, and it's like you're living for now, but there's no like, if this all stops tomorrow, I'm back to fucking getting a job.
Yeah.
But then there's the only focusing on the future, and it's all about the exit. Yep. And you sacrifice cash now, fun now, and your life's a bit shit on the end of a payday. Whereas we kind of want the best of both worlds, and I think you can have it.
Yeah, I do.
And I think when you invest enough money into certain assets and then you have a threshold where you're like, well, if we've already made that much and we know we've invested for our future, anything above that can be paid out as dividends or whatever. Yeah. You can have that like lifestyle where every year you're earning great money, but you also know that in 10 years you're done.
Yeah.
Like if you do it well.
Yeah.
So that's how we think anyway. And it's quite refreshing because and I know if I build a business for the next 10 years that gets me to that end game that doesn't rely on an exit, there's probably going to be some form of exit because the business will be in such good shape anyway. Yeah, there'll be someone who wants
it.
There'll be a way.
Of course they will.
Yeah. And I'll only be 47 then.
Oh,
so
sure.
I don't think I'll be ready to go. You will know. But the truth is, this business is 7 years old and it's like that. And I'm like, I said when I started Hoxo, at the age of 40, I'd probably be ready to quit. And I'm like, not even scratch the surface.
No, you still got a long way to go. Yeah, no, I agree with you totally. And actually, those companies that go into the bracket of, you know, just focusing on that end goal and they lose sight of what they're about and they lose the values that got them to where they are. And that's actually a massive pool of people.
There's also such a small percentage of people that actually sell. I'm not saying you shouldn't focus on it, but
have you ever had Mike Ames on? You should have Mike Ames on. He's really amazing because he has built and sold two companies, not just once, but twice. Yeah. Like he's so successful and that he's got a stat on that. And I think it is something like 3% of companies actually
sell. Yeah, tiny.
Which is, you know, so no, I agree with you. I think you can, you know, I think it's about what's right for yourself. And I think that any business owner, and, you know, I've been really honest, you know, it is something I'm talking to my financial advisors about, just more in line with my pension and stuff. I'll be okay. I'm not going to need to work beyond hopefully 67, but that's because I got screwed in my divorce. But that was a different pod. I think it's really good to have these conversations, but I think there's always moving parts. And I think, you know, I think it's good to have focus on long term, but also what the short term impact would be. As well.
Yeah, agreed. Leisha, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks.
It's always a pleasure. I'm glad things are still going well. Thanks for the advocacy you've given to me and my business. You know, you've always been a big promoter and it's been great to see what you've achieved. So keep going. We'll get you on again in the future.
Yeah.
If people aren't listening to the recruitment, recruiters podcast?
The Recruiters Recruitment Podcast. You know what you should do? I'm going to put this idea. You should get our cohort on as a little panel.
As a panel?
Wow. Or the ones that want to do it. You should definitely get me, Kyle and Jocks on.
No, let's do it. We'll plan it.
We'll do it. No, it's been a pleasure. And I will always, and you know, I really want people to know that when I advocate a business, it's because I genuinely, truly believe in it. And you, Hoxo literally transformed my brand on LinkedIn. And I know it's down to me and me doing the job and it's not you placing my candidates, but you gave me the tools and I have consistently continued to do the Hoxo strategy to this day, which is why, you know, you and I experienced it because, you know, it's 2 years ago, almost the day we did our charity walk where somebody literally screeched the car in Presswich and went, I know you off LinkedIn. And I get that all the time in real life. People come up to me and Shannon in Manchester and we'll be like, hiya. And they go, oh, you don't know us, but we know you off LinkedIn. And I'm not joking. It happens all the time in WeWorks. And I'll be like, I don't know who you are. And they'll go, oh, I'm so-and-so off LinkedIn. And I'm like, I don't know who you are. But that proves that it works.
100%.
Thank you.
Get you back on in the future. Good luck with everything.
Thanks, Sean.
Thank you as always for listening to today's show. I truly hope that you got value from it. Honestly, it's the only reason I take time every week to ensure that my audience, you guys, future and existing recruitment owners, you're learning from each other to make this industry that I love so much stronger. And today's episode is brought to you by my business, Hoxo. I'm the CEO and founder, and we're on a mission to help brand recruitment agencies and their people better. I want to help people have the tools to stand out in the most competitive markets in the world. We're currently working with over 350 recruitment agencies and 5,000 of their consultants right now, helping them to build their personal brands, to consistently win more business, attract talent, and just become that go-to recruiter in the market. Now, we do have a huge coaching program, but a lot of people don't know we also manage the brands of a lot of founders, and we can do the rebrand of that company organizational piece as well. So if your recruitment agency either needs help to look and sound exactly how you want it to, or your leadership and consultant level need to get out there and drive more traffic back to that website, to the business, and start using LinkedIn to generate more revenue, then you should definitely be reaching out to us. If that sounds of interest, please do visit www.hoxomedia.com or drop me, Sean, a personal message on LinkedIn. I love hearing from RAG listeners. I would love to talk to you. Look forward to it. So I'll see you again next week with another episode. Catch you soon.